Hi, folks. Doug McBurney here. Hey, if you're like me, you can't imagine life without three things: God, guitars, and Bob Inyart Live. And while my God will always be there for me, and my guitar is paid for, keeping Bob Inyart Live on the radio is a labor of love that demands our attention every now and then. And now is that time. September is Bob's telethon month, and he needs your help to stay on the radio for another year. Bob's presence on the mighty 50,000-watt KLT in Denver gives him the ability to consistently book A-list interviews and promote godly ideas on the terrestrial airwaves. I'm asking you to call right now or go online to purchase any or all of Bob's eye-opening Christian resources available in written, audio, or video formats. And with each new monthly subscription for the telethon or a donation of $50 or more, you will receive Bob's newest DVD, How to Be a Christian Family, as a free gift. Call 1-800-8-ENYART right now or go to kgov.com and come alongside Bob's vital ministry and keep Bob broadcasting for another year. That's 1-800-8-ENYART or go to kgov.com, kgov.com right now to give Bob the essential support that only you can offer.
One in morning, there's truth of a head. It gets beyond all the headlines you read. Don't need lip service with a wink and a nod. You need a man on a mission from God. Well, not to worry, here's Bob Inyart Live.
Greetings to the brightest audience in the country. I am Bob Inyart, the pastor of Denver Bible Church. Now, here's a pop quiz for the audience. Do you know who the speaker is for Saturday night's banquet, the Colorado Right to Life banquet? Well, you may remember when President Ronald Reagan appointed a man named Alan Keyes to be an ambassador to the United Nations. Well, fast forward from then to, what, about 6 years ago, when he was interviewed by Michael Medved. In fact, it was this month, 2007, and Medved asked Ambassador Keyes, do you want the issue of abortion returned to the states? And Dr. Keyes, I know, I took notes. He replied forcefully. I have his reply written down right here, but perhaps it'd be better to let Dr. Keyes speak for himself. Dr. Keyes, should the issue of abortion be returned to the states?
Well, I think I remember the response because it's always the same. We can't return the issue to the states because it's already been decided by God Almighty, who endowed us with our unalienable rights, which have to be respected by government at every level, state level, local level, national level. The Declaration of Independence said we're endowed by God with unalienable rights, and that government exists to secure these rights. That's not this government or that government, but all governments. And I think that remains the answer because it's the truth.
So, Dr. Keyes, thank you so much for that clear answer. There are a few things. I know that you're coming in to talk about the personhood amendment in Colorado. This is our fourth round of getting signatures for the Brady Amendment. But I would like to ask you a few questions about perhaps Obamacare, about why the liberals are so angry at Russia right now over homosexuality. And I don't know if you've heard the audio from John McCain on Fox News today, where he's compared the Muslim cry, Allahu Akbar, to a Christian saying, thank God. Could I play that audio for you, Dr. Keyes? It's just a half a minute.
Yes, please do.
Okay, let's go.
Allahu Akbar! Allahu Akbar!
I have a problem helping those people out if they're screaming that after a hit.
Would you have a problem with American Christians saying, thank God, thank God? That's what they're saying. Come on. Of course they are Muslims, but they are moderates. And I guarantee you that they are moderates. I know them and I've been with them. For someone to say Allah Akbar is about as offensive as someone saying, thank God.
So, Dr. Keyes, to equate Allahu Akbar with thank God, I think that that John McCain is making a grave error there.
Well, I think that the meaning of words has to be understood in terms of their usage, the way people make use of them, right?
Yeah.
And we all know, even from the Major Hassan, who attacked the folks at Fort Hood and who was just convicted and sentenced to death, when you are shouting Allahu Akbar in the context of going around murdering innocent people, I think that puts a different meaning into the word because of your usage of it.
Mm-hmm.
And that's precisely what has happened to the phrase on account of its use in the context of terrorist action.
Yes.
It has become an invocation whereby terrorists identify themselves as martyrs for the sake of cause that they believe God has inspired them to serve.
Mm. Yeah, it has basically become a jihadist battle cry. I seem to recall, I know that we could actually alter our own recollections and memory, but I seem to recall on 9/11, 2001, September 11th, CNN's coverage of the reaction that when the Twin Towers came down, they had a television crew, a TV crew in Palestine, and they had from the West Bank and the Gaza Strip, they had reports, and there was a spontaneous celebration when obviously thousands of Americans, men, women, and children were killed, and there were Palestinians shouting Allahu Akbar in celebration, women, elderly women throwing candy to kids in the streets in the spontaneous parades that sprung up. So, right, the phrase has come to be a battle cry for jihad.
And jihad has come because, you know, that there are those who will say, well, that just means peaceful struggle. It's like the moral struggle to follow the faith and so forth. But actually, again, in the context of the actual usage, it has come to mean that which encompasses the murder of innocents en masse in order to promote the destruction of other faiths and the triumph of Islam.
Hmm. Yeah, when I know from just observing foreign affairs and even America's military interventions and actions through my life that civilians are often killed. We speak of civilian casualties and collateral damage, but it has always been a desire, as best I can judge it, of our American forces to minimize casualties, to accomplish the mission, but to minimize civilian casualties, whereas terrorist organizations, they seek to maximize the civilian casualties. So that, of course, goes to the intent and the heart of the matter.
Well, in fact, terrorism requires the civilian casualties, because the root of the fear and terror that they mean to instill is the vulnerability of innocents to the terrorist action. So that in they don't actually target a lot of their terrorist activities at military installations and things that have military significance.
Mm-hmm.
They target things like the Boston Marathon, where they are going to be guaranteed to have a large number of folks whose death will actually instill fear in the hearts of all the people in that society to observe the event.
Mm-hmm. And we have, of course, crime, which includes murder, but then terrorism seems to involve this aspect of private individuals or groups trying to affect public policy changes and being willing to kill the innocent to achieve their political ends. And so when I notice that our media is very hesitant to use the term terrorism, it seems that they bend over backwards to refuse to acknowledge what is obviously the truth, private groups and individuals killing people to change public policy.
Well, I also think, though, that it can encompass states that employ the targeting of innocent people as a way of trying to achieve their war objectives and their political objectives.
Mm-hmm.
Because we see a lot of the folks who are involved in terrorism also encompass the state entities. Iran has been a big supplier and sponsor and promoter of terrorism. So has Syria at various times, Assad. So has, of course, the people who are behind Al-Qaeda and the folks who are fighting Assad.
Hmm.
It's one of the things that makes that whole situation I think, hard to understand for many Americans, mm-hmm. That we are now saying that we have some big moral interest in going in to deal with the brutality of Assad when we have been ignoring wholesale the brutality of the rebels who are fighting Assad, including their slaughter of many Christians in Syria. That is not a way of saying if they're any good or who's any good. It's a way of saying that when Satan and Beelzebub are fighting, we should not pretend that what we do is for the sake of some moral reaction.
Dr. Keyes, we saw this play out in Libya when we helped the rebels, and the rebels literally, after their victory, put the Al-Qaeda flag over courthouses in major cities. And so we have these instances where both sides are the bad guys, and in order to sell a military action, they attempt to whitewash the culpability of the bad guys, who in the Middle East repeatedly are allied with Al-Qaeda and Al-Qaeda operatives.
I think that's definitely the case. And given the conjuncture of circumstances that we're faced with in America today, where we're dealing with a whole range of issues that basically constitute an assault on our Constitution and our whole way of life, the institutions that sustain it, I think people are right to be deeply suspicious of the desire to take us into warlike actions that involve no direct attack on the United States, that involve no obvious and direct interest of the United States, and that will end up, as we have seen in the Middle East, putting weapons and opportunities for abuse in the hands of forces like the Muslim Brotherhood, like Al-Qaeda, that are deeply hostile to the survival of our country.
Dr. Keyes, I realize it's quite a change in topic, but could we move to the domestic issue of Obamacare and how that now is being gradually implemented? There have been all kinds of delays that have been put in place by the Obama administration. But the concept of Obamacare itself, well, the concept of government-provided health care. When I was young and involved in politics, it seemed that the average Republican or the average conservative realized that that was fundamentally a socialist issue, and that socialism, where the government was going to take care of people, would actually end up destroying the family and demotivating parents to take care of their own kids. But we fast forward a few decades, and it seems like what the Republicans want to do is have an alternative form of government health care, or a Mitt Romney form of Romney care. And so we've lost sight of what the truth is and what victory even would mean.
Well, I think that is true, Bob. And I think it reflects an underlying reality, which is the reality of the forces in control of both political parties and many of the folks who call themselves conservatives are forces that now basically accept the moral and ideological premises of socialism. The main moral premise is that for political purposes of justice, there is no God. And therefore, there are no fundamental God-endowed rights. There are no limits on the use of government power constrained by respect for God's will. I think that a lot of folks who call themselves conservatives and Republicans actually accept this premise now. Mm. And they reject the idea of God-endowed rights. And they don't apply the logic that is involved to the issues that confront us, whether it's Obamacare or other issues like the issue of life or the issue of the natural rights of the family that are involved in things like gay marriage. They don't bother because they actually don't believe in the fundamental premises outlined in the Declaration of Independence that begin with the idea that our rights come from the hand of God. Once you have rejected that premise, I believe you have essentially erased the difference between the approaches that we fought from the communists and other socialists and the approaches that are being espoused by people who still call themselves Republicans and conservatives, but who essentially embrace the logic that refutes and disparages all of the basic principles and moral ideas on which our Constitution and self-government are based.
We used to use the term rhino to refer to a liberal Republican in name only. Now I think it's we conservatives are the rhinos, because the party has become almost indistinguishable from a socialist party. When you said that many conservatives have accepted this notion that we don't owe allegiance to God to constrain government or uphold fundamental rights, Dr. Keyes, I don't want to mention the name of the group or their political director, but I had a private meeting with, in fact, the elders of our Denver Bible Church, with the leadership in one of our national Christian parachurch organizations. And we asked if they would reconsider their political strategy and if they would consider on each issue that they would consider the goal to be whatever God would want, even if it's unattainable, that would help us understand the direction we're to head. What would God want to be the policy on this particular issue? And I was interrupted and told by this director of public policy that is absolutely against their way of understanding how they need to influence public policy. And they were actually against the very notion of considering what would God want regarding, and then fill in the blank, homosexuality, abortion, marriage, taxes, whatever.
Well, Bob, what I find hard to understand in much of the account is why these folks would go on calling themselves Christians. Because as I remember it, Jesus was very clear about what we are to put first. He said in a general way, "Ye first the kingdom of God." Kingdom means the place where the authority of God prevails, right? God is king.
Right.
And the place where God is king is the place where God rules. And that means that in everything you do, you should put God's rule, God's command, God's authority first. So they have rejected Christianity. They have rejected the practical, clear, and relevant dictate of Christ in this matter. It was also true. They always talk about love and so forth and so on. Well, now, let me see. Christ said that we should, first of all, what did he say? Love the Lord your God with your whole heart, soul, mind, and strength, right?
Right.
And then, in another passage, it was very relevant, of course, he said that that if you love me, you will keep my commandments, right?
Yeah.
So, we love God with our whole heart, soul, mind, and strength. That means we will respect his commands in all that we do, right or wrong.
Yeah.
How can we reconcile that clear, unequivocal, explicit instruction from the scripture and from the mouth of Christ himself with what these people are saying about what they feel? It just doesn't make sense to me.
Well, we noticed that they're all for plumbers going about their business with a Christian worldview, and for painters going about their careers with a Christian worldview. But when it comes to governing authorities, they have bought this lie that our conservative politicians need to be neutral when it comes to God's will and God's revealed truth about right and wrong.
They say this, right?
Yes.
But then when I listen to the people who call themselves Republicans and conservatives and all these leaders, they always pay lip service to the Constitution. And they pay lip service to the ideas the country is founded on in the Declaration. And those ideas begin by defining justice, what is right, yes?
Yep.
In terms of the will of the Creator God. We hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal, that they are endowed by their Creator, not by human law, not by human military power, not by human judgment, not by politicians or legislatures or judges, but by God, the Creator, are endowed with their unalienable rights. That is to say, the inclination to right action that is inseparable from their conscience, from their nature, right?
Right.
That is what they believe. How can they say that somehow we can go about the business of dealing with the major issues that confront us as Americans, trying to live with and perpetuate this form of government that was our heritage of liberty, but they're really committed to that? How can they leave God out?
Yeah, how could you leave God out? And so I think what's happened is that many of our leaders have become ashamed of the gospel of Jesus Christ and ashamed to say, I've seen maybe our, you know, top two or three Christian leaders in America on Fox News and asked why marriage should only be between a man and a woman. And the answer they give is the dictionary. They say, because that's what the dictionary says. Well, words change in their meaning all the time. It's not because of the dictionary. It's because Jesus said that he made us male and female. From the beginning of the creation, God made us male and female. And God instituted marriage between a man and a woman. That's why, not this secular and supposedly neutral position that it's because of the dictionary.
Well, you know, the interesting thing is that because God is the creator, if you actually look at the nature of things, they will conform with God's will. And I think that part of the reason these people always get defeated in arguments is because someone will come along and say, well, you're just quoting what you believe. But I have the scientific position. I was reading something Obama said the other day where he was talking about sex education, right?
Yeah.
And he said about sex education, he said that he believes that it's the right thing to do. And he described what he thought was right as age-appropriate science-based education, right?
Yeah. Yeah, for kindergartners, no less. That was his point.
Now, of course, these people are promoting homosexual indoctrination in the elementary schools, in the schools at all levels, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then I stand back and I say to myself, but wait a minute. What is the scientific definition of sex? Science has to have pretty precise definitions in order to work.
Mm.
Well, it turns out that the scientific definition of sex has to do with the differentiation in form for the specific purpose of reproduction of a species.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that means that the minute that you take the scientific point of view, you are dealing with the difference between male and female and what is made possible by that difference, which is reproduction. Where that difference is not involved, sex is not involved.
Hmm.
So when these people talk about science-based sex education and then want to promote homosexuality, they're talking nonsense.
Right.
Even in scientific terms, it makes no sense.
Right, of course.
So, Bob, because God created us, male and female, and science can't change that. They can only take account of it.
It seems as though the culture seeks to rebel against God in every possible way. You know, public policy morality based on science. Science, the laws of science, don't use the terms right and wrong. They will call on science when it's convenient to promote a rebellious policy, something that denies the authority of God, and then they'll ignore science when it comes to basic nature. And the laws of nature. Dr. Keyes, we're almost out of time. Just a few minutes left. The banquet, thank you for being the speaker for this Saturday night's Colorado Right to Life banquet. And I'm sure you have not heard the news. I only heard it just this morning that the signatures are coming in to Personhood Colorado and Colorado Right to Life. The Brady Amendment signatures are coming in faster this election cycle than they have at any of the previous cycles. We've gotten on the ballot, statewide ballot, twice in Colorado so far. We've gotten on the Mississippi statewide ballot last year. Already, Personhood is on the North Dakota ballot for next year. With God's help, we'll get on the ballot this for 2014. And Dr. Keyes, the deadline is later this month in September for people to get their Brady Amendment signatures in. If anyone has signatures or a petition with signatures, please bring it to the banquet Saturday night. Colorado Right to Life will have notaries there, and they'll be able to accept your petition. So, Dr. Keyes, if you recall, Brady Serovic was killed by a drunk driver just last summer, and he was about 8 months old in his mother Heather's womb. Lord willing, Heather will be there at the banquet. She was very encouraged at the launch of the petition drive. You sent a statement in encouraging her and all those who are standing up for justice for Brady and all the kids in Colorado who right now our law does not recognize as persons. So Dr. Keyes, we're really thrilled that you're going to be here Saturday night.
Well, I am thrilled to be both celebrating the great work that y'all do, which is based, as we've seen on this program, on an unwillingness to back away from the simple truth and a willingness to bear witness to that truth in the logic that you apply, the great issues of moral judgment and conscience that are before the American people. And I think that the key to making sure that we will do so is to stand for those things which God says are true. And one of the things God says about the creation of man is that we're made in the image and likeness of God. And that word persona is the Latin word that refers to the image of something, like the image that actors used to carry in plays to denote the character that they were representing. Well, the Bible tells us that according to God's will, we are to represent God in his creation, his image, his likeness, and therefore an attack on a human being, such as an innocent child in the womb, is not just the disruption of a mass of cells. It is an attack on the majesty of God. It is an attack on the will of God. It is an attack on that which expresses the benevolent love and intention of God for all life. And I don't understand, again, Bob, how people who say that they're pro-life and then say that we should not be fighting for the sake of something which is at the very heart of
Yes. And Alan Keyes, we're out of time. Dr. Keyes, thank you so much. We look forward to seeing you Saturday night at the banquet, 7 o'clock. Hey, it's at I-70 in Quebec at the Holiday Inn. See you there. God bless you guys.
God bless you. Bye-bye.